Welcome to the Q4 2014 JBSU Earnings Conference Call. My name is Whitley, and I'll be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you require operator assistance, please press star followed by zero, and we will be happy to assist you. As a reminder, this call is being recorded for replay purposes. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Mr. Bill Ong, Senior Director of Investor Relations. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you, Whitley. Welcome to JBSU's fiscal fourth quarter and year-end 2014 earnings call. My name is Bill Ong, Senior Director of Investor Relations. Joining me on today's call are Tom Wechter, CEO, and Rex Jackson, CFO. David Heard, President of our Network and Service Enablement Business Unit, NSE, and Alan Lowe, President of our Communications and Commercial Optical Products Business Unit, CCOP, will join us for Q&A. Please note this call will include forward-looking statements about the company's financial performance. These statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from our current expectations. We encourage you to review our most recent filings with the SEC, particularly the risk factors in Part 1, Item 1A of our annual report on Form 10-K filed with the SEC on August 23rd, 2013. The forward-looking statements, including guidance we provide during this call, are valid only as of today. JBSU undertakes no obligations to update these statements. Please note also that unless otherwise stated, all results are non-GAAP, which excludes, among other items, amortization of acquired technology and other intangibles, stock-based compensation, and restructuring charges. We include a detailed reconciliation of these non-GAAP results to our GAAP financials, as well as a discussion of their usefulness and limitations in today's earnings release. The release, plus our supplemental slides and historical financial tables, are available on our website. Finally, we are recording this call today and will make the recording available by 6:00 P.M. Pacific Time this evening on our website. I would now like to turn the call over to Tom.
Thank you, Bill. Our fiscal fourth quarter 2014 revenue at $448.6 million exceeded the high end of our guidance range. Book-to-bill was greater than one for JDSU, with both CCOP and Optical Security and Performance Products, or OSP, above one, and NSE at parity on a strong quarter. Gross margin at 50% is a 15-year record high for JDSU, and NSE's gross margin at 65.5% also achieved a new high. I was also encouraged to see both OSP and commercial lasers at approximately 50% at the gross margin line. Fiscal year 2014 revenue grew 4% year-on-year to $1.74 billion in what turned out to be a challenging telecom spending period, mostly due to major architectural changes in play in the industry focused upon software-defined networks and network function virtualization, and to significant industry consolidation. The JDSU team achieved a number of key milestones in fiscal 2014. As just mentioned, gross margins improved, up 160 basis points year-on-year. We continued to innovate at a rapid pace, with products less than 2 years old generating 61% of revenue for our network-related businesses. We continued to invest significant R&D in key product areas important to growth in fiscal 2015 and beyond, in areas such as SDN, virtualization, enhanced security, and faster broadband access. The company generated $177 million of operating cash and repurchased $160 million, or 12.7 million shares of stock. We completed three acquisitions as part of our continuing strategy to diversify beyond our core telecom customer base and enter new growth markets such as enterprise and applications management. We established CCOP as a leader in the datacom market, and commercial lasers exceeded $40 million in quarterly revenue for the first time. I am pleased with these accomplishments, which I believe position JDSU well for sustainable revenue growth and gross and operating margin expansion over the longer term. As we look forward into fiscal 2015, we remain encouraged by the strength of key network demand drivers that bode well for our products and services supporting this customer base. Our network-related businesses make up 75%-80% of our total revenue. According to market research firms, 12.5 billion devices were connected to the internet in 2010. This figure is expected to double by 2015 and to double again to 50 billion devices by 2020, creating enormous wired and wireless data traffic demand and massive network management challenges. Network architectures, management solutions, and business models are evolving rapidly. This evolution creates opportunities for carriers, service providers, network equipment manufacturers, enterprise, Web 2.0 players, and key enablers like JDSU to capitalize on these trends. We have transformed our Comtest business of 2010 into the network and service enablement business of the future. In network enablement, or NE, we have a strong focus on cloud-enabled field and lab instruments, hardware-centric solutions, and empowering workforce efficiency. Service enablement, or SE, consists of software-centric solutions and support that ensure that applications and services customers demand are delivered. This year, NSE's network enablement business maintained its number one position in field test instruments, gaining share and turning in strong performances in fiber, broadband access, and wireless network enablement solutions, all of which saw solid growth year on year. In service enablement, we have invested heavily to support our customers' moves to SDN and NFV technologies and to increase software content. We saw bookings growth in next-generation mobile assurance and from the recently acquired enterprise-focused network instruments business. As expected, SE legacy wireline and wireless assurance platform revenue declined as customers scaled back mature product lines and invested in leading-edge solutions. CCOP's optical components business also turned in a good year, maintaining its number one position in telecom and achieving further penetration in datacom, which was up approximately 28% year-on-year for fiscal 2014. Geographically, fiscal 2014 revenue from the Americas was essentially flat as key U.S. customer spending was restrained while carriers wrestled with major architectural decisions and consolidation activities. European spending has lagged for several years, but bookings recovered somewhat in fiscal 2014 as EMEA revenues increased 8% year-on-year. Asia-Pacific, notably China, continue to build out network infrastructure and invest in the latest technologies. Our revenue in this region grew about 7% from a year ago. Turning now to overt anti-counterfeiting, this is an important market for JDSU as we have a significant leadership position and operate in close partnership with our customer base. This past year, we completed the pruning of low-margin, non-strategic products representing approximately $24 million a year in annual revenue, which will enable the OSP leadership team to further increase its focus on the anti-counterfeiting market, as well as high-growth markets of optical coating, including consumer electronics. We see healthy market demand for our optically variable magnetic pigment, OVMP, product as new banknote designs continue to adopt the security technology. OVMP is now featured in banknote designs for 51 countries, up from 48 last quarter and from 43 a year ago, and with overall security pigments globally deployed in more than 110 countries. In our commercial laser business, we ended the year with record revenue and gross margin of $40.7 million and 49.9%, respectively. Commercial laser revenue for fiscal 2014 grew 5.9% year-on-year, with our fiscal Q4 growing 44.3% year-on-year, driven by the successful adoption of our Gen 2 kilowatt fiber laser, as well as strength from the semiconductor industry. JDSU Zurich, our time bandwidth products, ultrafast lasers, also experienced increased demand. We are very excited about the market pull that has resulted from the combination of this innovative technology and JDSU's infrastructure and market reach. JDSU was an early enabler of gesture recognition, or 3D sensing technology, in 2010, beginning with gaming consoles, and is recognized as a leader in this field through its expertise in laser diodes and optical filters, two critical elements for implementing the technology. 3D Sensing turned in a strong fiscal 2014 following nominal revenue in fiscal 2013. Looking forward, we do not expect meaningful 3D Sensing revenue over the next two quarters. However, as new applications for mobile devices, home entertainment, and personal computing are adopted, JDSU is well positioned to capture high volume opportunities. A major PC-related customer is taking delivery of pre-production units of our 3D Sensing offerings. We are working closely with our other customers in consumer electronics as they look to develop their own uses for 3D sensing. While the market size, timing of deployment, and rate of adoption remain unclear, we believe these new applications represent a meaningful future business opportunity for JDSU. At 4% revenue growth in fiscal 2014, JDSU did not see the robust top line we had expected entering the year. We did, however, expand gross margins significantly with an exit rate of 50% due to strong acceptance of our new products and improved operational performance. Cash flow from operations remained strong with 31 straight quarters of positive operating cash flow, contributing to a healthy balance sheet. We are confident that our investments will position us to meet our customers' future requirements and to further differentiate JDSU from our competitors. Although disruptive in the short term, we see the radical technology shifts taking place in the networks, rapid expansion of data centers, and a movement to the cloud as opportunities for growth as we enter into fiscal 2015. I'll now turn the call over to Rex for further details on our quarterly and year-end results.
Thank you, Tom. JDSU's fiscal fourth quarter 2014 revenue was $448.6 million. Up 7.3% from last quarter and up 6.5% year-on-year, and exceeded our revenue guidance range of $425 to $445 million. Geographically, the Americas accounted for $216.5 million, up 5.9% from last year, EMEA for $100.7 million, up 16%, and Asia-Pacific for $131.4 million, up 1.1%. The geographic sales mix was 49% for the Americas, 22% for EMEA, and 29% for Asia-Pacific. Gross margin at 50% was up 240 basis points from last quarter and up 390 basis points from a year ago. All three business segments contributed to the improvement. Operating expenses at $185.1 million were up 7.7% sequentially from $171.9 million, higher than our previous commentary and reflecting increased R&D investments in both NSE and CCOP strategic growth areas, and higher sales commissions and bonuses. Our GAAP results include $20 million in restructuring expenses from Q4 plans adopted by NSE, CCOP, and shared services to reduce our operating expenses longer term. We anticipate future annualized cost savings of more than $30 million as a result of restructuring activities initiated in fiscal 2014. Operating margin at 8.7% was at the high end of our guidance range of 7 to 9% on higher revenue and gross margin, up from Q3's 6.5% and up year-on-year from 7.2%. Net income was $34.2 million, up 46.2% from our third quarter, again due to higher revenue and gross margin levels and up 12.5% from a year ago. Similarly, EPS was 14 cents versus 10 cents last quarter and 13 cents a year ago. For the year, revenue at $1.74 billion grew 4% from fiscal 2013's $1.68 billion, while gross margin improved by 160 basis points to 48.1% versus 46.5% a year ago. Operating margin at 8.7% is flat year-on-year, while net income at $133.1 million improved slightly from last year's $131.8 million, and non-GAAP EPS improved to 56 cents versus 55 cents a year ago. In all cases, due to incremental operating expenses from acquisitions in fiscal 2014 and higher organic R&D investments that offset increased revenue and gross margin. For the full fiscal year, GAAP net loss was $17.8 million, or an 8-cent per share loss, versus $57 million net income, or 24 cents per share in fiscal 2013. The current period reflects $23.8 million in restructuring expenses and the absence of last year's Q4 $113 million tax benefit. Turning to the segments, NSE's revenue of $209.1 million was up 10.2% from a year ago and exceeded our guidance of $195 to $205 million. NSE's book-to-bill ratio was approximately 1-to-1. Gross margin at 65.5% improved 540 basis points from last year, reflecting continued operational improvements and better mix. Operating margin at 13.9% improved 440 basis points year-on-year, exceeding our guidance range of 11 to 13%. New products, defined as those products less than 2 years old, represented 60% of revenue versus 54% in Q3. Moving into fiscal 2015, we have determined to break out NSE into two new reporting segments, NE and SE, to provide shareholders a better understanding of these businesses, which are very different in terms of size, maturity, margins, investment requirements, revenue timing, and business models. Network enablement is, again, principally our traditional communications test instrument business. NE revenue for Q4 was $165.5 million, or 79% of NSE, with strength in fiber, broadband access, and mobility test products offset by weakness in storage network testing from a year ago levels. Book-to-bill was approximately one. As shown in the 2014 pro forma financials we are providing today, NE has consistently improved its gross margin in the last 12 months, with its operating margin reaching approximately 20%, the bottom of our published NSE business model range, in Q2 and Q4. This reflects operational improvements, an evolving product mix focused on customer needs and high-speed applications and mobility, and product pruning. Recall that NE market opportunity is about $2.7 billion with a 4% CAGR. Service enablement consists of software-centric solutions that are embedded in the network and includes our ERISO, network instruments, and Trendium acquisitions, as well as our packet portal platform. In Q4, SE had a book-to-bill ratio of approximately 1 and generated $43.6 million in sales, or 21% of NSE. Notable booking strength came from location intelligence and next-generation mobile assurance. Our enterprise performance management solutions from the network instruments acquisition were gross margin accretive in Q4, and are expected to be earnings accretive this quarter. Looking forward, we expect to continue SE's forward progress in fiscal 2015 as new, higher-margin business from R&D investments made in high-growth market segments and from recent acquisitions replace our legacy service assurance businesses, enabling SE to have an expected zero to low single-digit operating margin as we exit fiscal Q4 of this year. We continue to believe SE is an attractive revenue and margin growth opportunity for JDSU, in a $3.1 billion market with a 12% growth rate. We continue to collaborate closely with many Tier 1 customers and several NIM customers on Packet Portal. Packet Portal addresses the industry's need for new, more cost-effective methods of gaining critical network visibility and intelligence at the edge of the network where most service impairment issues occur. The significance of this technology has increased within our customer base as they are faced with the reality of a multi-speed internet and the huge strain of traffic and big data running on their networks. As a disruptive solution, adoption will be gradual, but we are pleased with the feedback we continue to receive from existing and potential customers. Moving on to CCOP, bookings were well above 1-to-1. Telecom, datacom, and lasers were above 1, with lasers posting a second consecutive record bookings quarter. Book-to-bill was substantially below 1 as expected in our 3D sensing products. CCOP revenue of $196.9 million was up 8% from the fourth quarter of last year and above the midpoint of our guidance range of $190 million to $200 million. Optical communications revenue of $156.2 million rose 1.4% from a year ago, reflecting higher telecom and datacom revenue levels and offsetting our expected 3D sensing revenue decline of approximately $12 million. The optical component pricing decline was approximately 2% quarter-on-quarter, which was at the low end of our typical 2-4% expectation. Commercial laser revenue was a record $40.7 million, up 44.3% from a year ago and 31.7% from the prior quarter, driven by strength from both solid-state Q-series lasers and Gen 2 fiber lasers. The Q-series is experiencing healthy demand from the semiconductor capital equipment sector, while our partner Amada continues to ramp our Gen 2 fiber laser used for industrial cutting applications. In Q4, our fiber laser revenue was $11 million, up 86.4% from the prior quarter. JDSU Zurich continues to gain traction with our ultra-fast lasers generating more than $2.5 million in the quarter. CCOP's gross margin at 33.3% increased 250 basis points from a year ago, reflecting primarily higher commercial laser mix and favorable optical components mix along with operational improvements. Optical communications gross margin at 28.9% increased 70 basis points from a year ago, but was down 40 basis points from the prior quarter due to lower revenue. Commercial lasers gross margin reached record levels of 49.9% and rose by 450 basis points versus last year and by 100 basis points compared to the prior quarter. Operating margin at 10.2% increased by 20 basis points from a year ago on both higher revenue and favorable product mix, but was at the low end of the guidance range of 10 to 12% due to higher operating expenses. New products less than 2 years old represented 57% of optical components revenue versus Q3 at 64%. In an effort to better align our product reporting to end markets, going forward we are grouping the optical communications sales mix into three end markets, telecom, datacom, and consumer and other. The consumer and other grouping includes 3D sensing and industrial diode revenue. Fiscal Q4 sales mix for telecom was 74%, datacom was 17%, and consumer and other was 9%, versus a year ago's 70%, 16%, and 14%, respectively. The telecom-datacom sales mix ratio has been about 80-20 for the past several quarters. Datacom revenue grew 9.6% year-on-year, but fell 15.4% sequentially due to lumpy demand from a large Web 2.0 customer. We expect our datacom revenue to rebound in the first half of fiscal 2015, as we recently secured a significant new share award at one of our larger customers. Moving on to OSP, revenue of $42.6 million was down 13.4% from a year ago, down 16.6% quarter-on-quarter, but above the midpoint of our guidance range of $41 to $43 million. The quarter-on-quarter revenue decline reflects our exit of several lower-margin thin film coating businesses, with last-time buys in the quarter at $1 million versus an historical average of $6 million per quarter for these products, and lighter demand for our core anti-counterfeiting products. OSP's book-to-bill ratio was well above one in the quarter. Gross margin at 50.7% improved 150 basis points versus a year ago, even on lower revenue levels as we exited the aforementioned lower margin businesses. Historically, we have achieved 50% gross margin levels at a $50 million or greater quarterly revenue run rate, so we are pleased we are now able to achieve 50% plus gross margins at a low $40 million revenue rate and would thus expect margin expansion on higher sales. Operating margin at 33.3% declined 170 basis points from a year ago on modestly higher operating expenses, but significantly lower revenue levels, and was just above the midpoint of the guidance range of 32 to 34%. Turning to our balance sheet, we maintained a strong cash position at $881.3 million, down from $926.2 million at the end of the March quarter. Operating cash flow at $50.2 million improved from the prior quarter's $42.5 million as we delivered our 31st consecutive quarter of positive cash flow. Capital expenditures for the quarter were $31.7 million, consistent with guidance, and primarily to support manufacturing capacity investments in both CCOP and OSP. Depreciation and amortization was $34.7 million. From our $100 million stock repurchase plan announced on May 27th, we purchased $60 million, or 5.25 million shares, in Q4 at an average price of $11.43 per share, with $55 million settling in quarter. Looking forward to Q1, we expect fiscal first quarter revenue to be $405 million to $425 million and non-GAAP operating margin to be 6 to 8%. At our revenue midpoint of $415 million, this reflects a 3.3 year-on-year decline from last year's $429 million. Our first quarter fiscal 2015 midpoint estimate reflects year-on-year improvements in revenue from networking and laser end markets, which are more than offset by approximately $30 million of year-on-year revenue declines from lower 3D sensing sales and the absence of OSP revenue from the product lines we exited in fiscal 2014. Any revenue is expected to be $120 to $130 million, with an operating margin between 10 and 12%. SE revenue is expected to be $40 to $45 million, with an operating margin loss between 7.5% and 4.5%. Any faces typical fiscal Q1 seasonality, compounded by expected continuing customer indecision as they consider the transition to increased network virtualization and more software-centric solutions. Any revenue from Q1 of fiscal 2014 was $145.1 million, with an operating margin at 15.5%. The approximately 14% year-on-year decline at midpoint of the current range reflects primarily lighter North American Tier 1 carrier spend. SE revenue in Q1 of fiscal 2014 was $26.8 million, a low top-line quarter that drove a more than 30% operating margin loss. The SE revenue guidance midpoint at $42.5 million reflects nearly 60% of year-on-year growth, which reflects investment in key areas such as enterprise and location intelligence, and substantially narrows SE's operating loss. We expect CCOP revenue to be $200 to $210 million with operating margin between 12 and 14%. Our CCOP revenue midpoint is $205 million versus $204.6 million in Q1 of last year. The flat year-on-year revenue change again reflects the expected $22 million lower year-on-year 3D sensing revenue, offset by the better performance of other CCOP product lines, especially our commercial lasers business. We expect OSP revenue to be $42 to $44 million with operating margin between 34 and 36%. Our OSP revenue midpoint is $43 million versus $52.5 million a year ago. The decline is largely from exiting low-margin product lines, but also reflects some continuing near-term softness in any counterfeiting demand. We expect non-GAAP EPS to be 8 to 12 cents. Please refer to the supplementary slide deck for other fiscal first quarter 2015 financial metrics guidance posted on the JDSU website. I'll now turn the call back over to Tom.
Thanks, Rex. Historically, the September quarter is seasonally soft for the NE business. Moreover, the traditional test and measurement business has been particularly challenging for network test equipment providers during the past several years, especially in the last four quarters, and we expect these challenges to continue in the immediate future. North American carriers have ratcheted down wireline spending while redeployed investments in wireless infrastructure have been tepid due to rapid changes in network technology architectures. Given our leadership position in many of these markets, we are also subject to these macroeconomic industry forces that have adversely impacted the NE business. However, these changes in technology validate our focus on identifying emerging technologies that have allowed us to meaningfully grow the SE business. As a result, as the industry becomes increasingly more focused on SDN and NFV technologies, we believe the service enablement business will play a larger role in supporting our service provider and enterprise customers to improve network service and application performance in fiscal 2015 and beyond. In CCOP, optical component demand remains healthy with notable strength in Datacom, 100G modulators, and China's infrastructure spend. Our Gen 2 kilowatt fiber laser customer, Amada, is enthusiastic about this new generation of product, along with its differentiated variable cutting head, and continues to ramp their industrial metal cutting production as the industry accelerates its conversion from traditional CO2 lasers. In OSP, we have repositioned the business to focus on higher growth and higher margin business opportunities. Looking ahead in fiscal year 2015, with robust booking from incremental anti-counterfeiting businesses, we believe OSP's revenue should return to the $50 million level by fiscal Q2, with corresponding margin improvement driven primarily by further adoption of our OVMP product for the banknote market. We are also expanding our development efforts in consumer electronics with technologies targeting 3D sensing applications using our optical filters, as well as applications in the government and healthcare markets that can leverage our optical coating expertise. We believe the addressable end markets that JDSU serves remain on track with a blended growth rate in the mid to high single-digit percentage range in fiscal year 2015, with typical seasonal quarterly variations. I would like to thank our employees, business partners, and shareholders for your interest and continued support of JDSU. I'll turn the call over to Bill to begin the Q&A session.
Thank you, Tom. I'd like to ask everyone to limit discussion to one question and one follow-up. Willie, let's begin the question and answer session.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your phone. Your first question comes from the line of Michael Genovese with MKM Partners. Please proceed.
Great. Thanks very much. Tom, you seem to be saying that the technology transitions have been hurting the NE business in the wireless market. Could you just flesh that idea out more and tell us what you're referring to?
I think there's been a transition going on, obviously, in the wireless to the LTE, and you got TD, LTE in China, et cetera. And most of our play comes once the networks are actually installed and get equipment or subscribers across the equipment and get the capacity usage up. So that transition initially, as 2G and 3G have dropped off significantly, have created a bit of a lull in that spending we normally see out of the, you know, those operators.
Okay, and can you comment specifically if you've seen any changes recently, you know, in the level of demand in NSE related to, you know, both the major cable merger and then secondly, the major wireless merger that people thought were going to happen and now looks like it's not going to happen and that fallout? Have you seen a recent downward revision in, like, 3Q because of either of those?
On the cable side, our business has been real healthy, so I don't think up to this point we've really been impacted by what's been discussed as far as the merger out there. I think on the telco side with major North American operator, we have seen some pullback as a result of both the architectural changes going on and the intended merger. So I think that has impacted the telco side of the business in North America.
Okay, and then final question for me is, you know, looking at all your guidance here and sort of plugging it through, it looks like there's a big sequential decrease in OpEx. And are those, you know, more accounting-related things, or is that coming from some underlying cost-cutting going on?
It comes from a couple of impacts. One is just basic cost controls as we're trying to hold OpEx down for the first quarter. And you'll see slightly lower bonus and sales commission accruals as well because it's a lighter quarter.
Okay, but that sounds right to you, that idea that CapEx will be down, say, high single – or, sorry, OpEx, sort of high single digits sequentially? Or
that's
mid to high single digits?
That's in dollars?
Yeah.
That's maybe not quite that much, a little less than that, but, yeah, 5 to 10.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Patrick Newton with Stifel. Please proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. I guess jumping right into the NSE business, Alan or Tom, I think you talked about your more mature service assurance business declining in the quarter. I'm trying to get an understanding of where that business stands on a annualized revenue basis, and then if we think about that from a gross margin contribution, I think the thing that was kind of surprising on your breakout of NE and SE is that your NE business is actually above the high end of your long-term gross margin target range, while SE is supposed to be the tailwind and should be the tailwind on a go-forward basis. So can you give us our thoughts around what a longer-term gross margin target could be looking like?
Okay, so I think for the service enablement business or service assurance business, I should say, the legacy SS7 is definitely coming off pretty rapidly now. We really haven't split out the size of that revenue. We don't go down to that level, but it has been a significant or a reasonable, you know, revenue level for us in the NSE business. So we're expecting with the next generation of mobile assurance, we believe that we have a unique platform that we've now brought to market with a combination of the Trendium acquisition and some of our other capabilities that, you know, we'll see some nice growth as that starts to trend up as this new architecture is required. I think as far as the gross margin levels between NE and SE, we do expect over time that the SC gross margins will be higher than NE, but we have seen a nice improvement in NE both through mix and operational improvements. So we want to continue that moving in the right direction as well. But SE, once we are more through the initial stages of some of this revenue recognition where we don't see the revenue, but you do some of the costs do drop into the cost of sales. That's causing some of that depressed level on the gross margins for SE. You know, I would suspect when we get out in time that the SE gross margins would be well above our average today, which we were at almost 66% this last quarter. I would expect we'd, you know, SE would be up in the kind of mid-70s plus range as far as gross margins as we get out past some of this initial revenue recognition timing, et cetera.
Okay, so I guess we could maybe look to your analyst day for an updated long-term target there?
We will do that. Yeah, that's what we plan for across all of our businesses with the split out of NESE, the other two businesses. We're going to give you an update on our models. Those models, all of them are about 3 years old now, so time to update.
Perfect. And then I guess shifting to the fiber laser, Alan, I asked a very similar question last quarter. Very nice number on that $11 million revenue for the Gen 2 fiber laser. I'm curious, though, last time on your Gen 1, you saw revenue ramp up to about $10 million a quarter on a sell-in basis, and then the sell-through just wasn't all that exciting. As you sit here today, can you talk about how you feel about the Gen 2 fiber laser ability to grow from here? And then also in the past, you talked about your ability to target customers outside of Amada. Is there a chance we could see a material ramp in customers outside of Amada in your fiscal 2015?
Yeah, I think as far as peak revenue, I don't think we've seen it for sure on Gen 2. The ramp and the adoption by our customer of the Gen 2 has gone extremely much, much better than our Gen 1, and therefore the field deployment at their customers is going quite well, and the sales guys are all excited at Amada. So I think we're going to continue to see growth at Amada. We're focused on supporting them through this ramp as well as expanding our footprint within Amada, both in higher power lasers as well as different applications within Amada. So that is what our focus is for fiscal 15. I don't think you'll see meaningful revenue outside of Amada in 15.
Great. Thank you for taking my questions. Good luck.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of James Kisner with Jefferies. Please proceed.
Thanks. I guess I just wanted to, again, look at the guidance a little bit and just understand perhaps, you know, gross margin and what you're assuming there. I mean, I'm also noting here that the optical component margin here, or communications margins, was down quite a bit. Is that all leverage? Were there some mixed issues there? Could you elaborate on your expectations for gross margin and that performance in the quarter?
Yeah, gross margin was down just slightly from Q3 on lower revenue. If I have the numbers here, just a second. Gross margins were down by 40 basis points on a drop in revenue, attributable to, as Rex pointed out in his part of the script, Datacom dropped by one of our large Web 2.0 customers, as well as the expected drop in Gesture. So I don't think there's anything out of what we expected from a gross margin standpoint in Opcoms. And I think going forward, we're expecting that to pick back up as revenue levels do increase.
Okay, so that's going to be up a little bit. So, but in general, overall gross margin could be down here. I mean, perhaps, I don't know, 200 bips sequentially. Is that a fair assumption, perhaps?
Maybe a little bit more than that. Call it a point.
Okay, just final question. I'll pass here. Just curious about the optical communications weakness. It was a little light versus our expectations. Are you guys seeing any impact here from, second sourcing on WSS and tunable XFP? You know, I'm just curious how those products performed and what the outlook is for those. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of data points. One is our tunable XFP revenue grew 16% quarter on quarter, and so I think we're gaining share as a result of really. And that includes our tunable SFP Plus as well. So we've launched our second generation tunable SFP Plus, and that's contributing to our growth in the tunable business. I think kind of broader base, I would say that the networks are being deployed with at the core at 100G, and the spending at the service provider is really at the 100G core deployment as opposed to new greenfields. And so I think, directionally we saw a drop in ROADM revenue, although I don't think we lost substantial share, if any. I will say that one of the areas of keen strength was the business of submarine cables and our growth in submarine bookings. We had a book-to-bill of over 3-to-1 in our submarine business and expect that to really contribute to the balance of our fiscal 15 growth.
All right, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Sue with RBC Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Thank you. Tom, maybe your thoughts on just the duration of the customer indecision at the moment and the impact of the consolidation, how long things might last beyond the near term. Should we think about the fourth quarter? Should we think about lingering thoughts into the early part of next year? Just the duration, please.
Yeah, so we're obviously not giving a guidance out past this next quarter, but I would say a couple of quarters is the likelihood that, you know, I would suspect we'll know more as we progress to this next quarter, but I would expect that's a couple of quarters with this change in technology and then also making plans on potential acquisition.
Okay, that's helpful. And then, Tom, if we step back and look at the industry, carrier consolidation, it's rarely a good thing for the vendors. And they consolidate so they have more purchasing power. JDSU has been able to deflect some of the pricing pressure by higher gross margin acquisitions and lower margin pruning. As we see these big, large acquisitions on the carrier side, are there considerations to kind of look at your business and say, we need more scale here, we don't really need to be in this business, to look at it from an aggregate profit contribution point of view so that when you look at it, you say, look, the industry is changing. Maybe the companies should recompose its assets. Or to ask simply, does JDSU need to be in so many businesses?
Yeah, no, it's a question we always review and ask ourselves. I think the actual consolidation in the carrier space won't have a huge impact on, you know, looking at the composition of our portfolio of businesses, but it does, I think, give us some opportunities with this consolidation to continue to move up the food chain and offer some of these higher-end solutions, and that's what we're doing. And part of the restructuring charges that you saw this quarter are really addressing some of that mix change and things we need to do to get out of certain areas and more focus into other areas that we think you know, will benefit our future growth. So, you know, we've taken some of those charges this past quarter as we prepare for that.
That's helpful. Thank you, and good luck, gentlemen.
Thanks, Mark.
Your next question comes from the line of Simon Leopold with Lehman James. Please proceed.
Great, thank you. Just wanted to check on a couple things. One, I appreciate the new segmentation, particularly around the network service enablement. It's helpful. I want to try to get a sense of the guidance of how much of this is reflective of kind of lumpiness and how much of the implied decline of the network enablement sequentially is related to consolidation versus the bigger picture trend you've talked about of the mix shift towards the more software-centric business. And as a follow-up, if you could provide some comments on the longer term, meaning calendar 15, on your thoughts on the 100 gig market. Thank you.
Okay. David Hurd, do you want to take the first part of that?
Yeah, sure. I think it's a good question. So I think we finished Q4 and the NE piece reasonably strong as carriers, and especially the North American carriers. We brought in about 5 to 7 million more than anticipated as evidence in the guidance range. And I think as we look at the summer and we look at the carriers looking at how they're going to test their networks for SDN and NFV, we're seeing one particular in the U.S. That's doing that and looking at some M&A. And so the timing of that impact, I think, is just creating some choppiness in that NE market. What we've done over the last 2 years is really try to focus the fundamentals on where that change isn't going to have an impact. So we've increased, you know, our investments in LTE base station test, fiber, which continues to grow year over year, and that wide broadband access. And so I think overall we still see that as a $2.7 billion market that's going to grow in that 3 to 4% range continuously. And over the last year, we've continued to take share in that space. And in Q4, we actually have had some organic growth go as a result of our investments. To the second part of your question, I think absolutely that $3 billion plus market that Tom referenced in his prepared remarks, that's where we see the carriers going, and that's where we see consolidation and the enterprise all moving up the stack. And that's why we're putting, you know, we're continuing to invest our R&D resources, because that's all in line with where virtualized networks are going, where software is defining the network. Did I answer your question there?
You did. That's helpful. And then the other one was the longer term, kind of 2015, calendar 15 thoughts on 100 gig market, particularly as metro ramps.
Yeah, this is Alan. Good question. I think we're still seeing strong demand that outstrips our capacity for what I'll call the long-haul 100 gig market, and we expect that to continue through calendar 15. We do see that getting into the regional area, metro probably more late calendar 15, as the costs and volumes need to, and power consumption needs to really go down to keep up with a competitive market of, say, our tunable XFP. So I think from a JDSU perspective, on the carrier side, modulators are going to continue to grow. We just transferred back-end production to a CM in Asia, so we're expecting to continue to grow our modulator business for 100G. We are starting to ramp now our narrow line with laser for 100G, and we expect that to really continue to take off. And then as we look at the data center market, that's still predominantly 10 and 40G, and we expect 100G, while it's small, to grow dramatically through calendar 15 and 16 in a meaningful way, the data center.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Alex Henderson with Needham & Company. Please proceed.
Thanks. Just a couple of quick clarifications. I think the one comment you made was that your Datacom Web 2.0 customer had a fall off in the quarter. Are you implying that that's a temporary one-quarter thing and that Datacom Web 2.0 player is likely to come back on track? I missed the context around that. I was wondering if you could clarify it.
I think the main comment is that we see lumpy demand because of the nature of the build-out of the data centers themselves. So we think this will be a kind of a repeat pattern where we'll see the lumpiness, but we don't think the business itself is going away.
Yeah, and I think what we're trying to do is to expand our footprint within those Web 2.0 customers so that the lumpiness at any one customer is not as painful as we saw last quarter, and we're making good progress on that front.
Are you expecting still growth out of the Web 2.0 players in terms of their aggregate spending as well as your share within it?
Absolutely.
Okay, and then can you outline where you are in terms of the Aviso revenue recognition process and the packet portal progress metrics that you guys have been promising to talk about in terms of whether it's been included in some of the RFPs by the major network operators and where you are in getting OEMs to sign up to carry it. And similarly with the network instruments, where are you on the integration and dilution from that?
Okay, Rex will take the first part on the RevRec timing, and David will talk about the business itself.
So the timing on this applies actually both to Ariso and also to a product set which includes our Trendium acquisition earlier this year. Currently, we are assuming that bookings in those two areas take about 3 to 6 months to turn to initial revenue, and when you get to initial revenue, it is recognized ratably after that. So there's not a significant inflection that we're anticipating, though later in this year, we're expecting to get, later this fiscal year, we're expecting to get to what they call VSOE on one or more products, and that would contribute to greater strength in the back half of the year.
So could you just give us some sense of what we're not recognizing in revenues that are, you're absorbing costs on still? I mean, there must be some scaling of this thing to give us some sense of what it would look like.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're having we've got two things going on right now. There's the SE business, which you can now see on a broken out basis, includes both the new growth opportunities that we're investing heavily in, but also includes some legacy assurance products that are rolling off. So you've got, you're basically replacing older revenue with new higher quality revenue going forward. So our goal this year is to build a meaningful backlog and then, of course, deferred revenue on the balance sheet through this fiscal year and really hit our stride in SE in FY16. There's a comment in the script that that we're looking to break even or better on the SE business late this year, and that's still the plan of record.
And then one other question on the pricing out of China. Can you talk a bit about the magnitude of the price delta between what you're selling in other geographies and in China, and if that's a higher rate of growth area, is there any impact on margins as a result of that shift?
No, I'd say when there's a allocation decision to be made, and 100 gig is where we're seeing a lot of the main growth across all regions, pricing becomes a lot more friendly. So 100 gig modulators, there's not much, if any, price difference regardless of where we sell it, and then there's also specification differences that then come into play. So I wouldn't say there's a radical difference on those types of products. I think if you looked at a pluggable product for a SIPRI base station, that's probably pretty ugly because there's a lot of people competing for that business, and that's one that we've historically stayed away from.
Okay, thank
David,
you.
David, you want to comment on the packet portal milestones?
Yeah, sure. Good question, Alex. So I think we talked about a couple of milestones. One, continuing to see tier ones included in RFPs, which that has continued. In the quarter, we've had another Tier 1 service provider certify Packet Portal as their solution of choice going forward as they face the challenges of SDN and NFV. I think that's great, but obviously you then have to scale that. In addition to the Tier 1, we also have NEM certification from our first major NEM partner. So we are progressing on those fronts and can continue to believe that that is going to be a great solution for SDN and NFV, and are aiming to offset the dilution of that investment that we've talked about in prior periods still by the close of our fiscal year.
Thanks so much, Alex.
And those results are included in the SE results, and we'll further go through them in our analyst day.
Great, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Amitabh Passi with UBS. Please proceed.
Hi, thank you. Tom, my question again was around NSE. We had 2 years of declines in 2012, 2013, barely grew in 2014, and we're starting the year again down 2.5%. I understand the pressures in NE, but even if I look at SE over the last three quarters plus the guidance, we're basically hovering around $40 million a quarter. So just trying to understand, can NEC in aggregate even grow in fiscal 15, or should we just plan for another year of declines in overall sales?
No, we do plan on NSE growing. We did say that in general, the SE part, we believe the market will grow 10 to 13%, and we think we'll grow at least as well as the market. Although we're going through a period right now with the North American operators, we did see demand pick up, as we said, in Europe, in EMEA, and we're seeing some pick up in Asia. We do think that the operators will get through this period. As I mentioned, I think it's a couple quarters, don't know for sure, but that would be my best estimate right now. So we would expect, somewhat around the market growth rate to be about 4% for the NE business. And again, we do believe we're taking market share there. So we should be able to grow at least with the market, plus, again, we believe we're growing market share because of the additional software content for the NE products, but also the combination of NE and SE, we believe positioned us very well with the operators.
Okay, and then just a follow-up for Rex. Rex, just on the OPEX line, revenue's up 6%, 6.5% year-over-year. OPEX was up almost 13%. And even if I look at it sequentially, there was basically no leverage in the model. So just trying to understand some of the OPEX gyrations, both in fiscal 4Q and then, obviously in fiscal 1Q, it's coming down. Do we get to a slightly more smooth trajectory?
So I think there's a couple of things going on there. Obviously, it is up meaningfully year over year. As you look out into 2015, I think you should assume an increase in operating expenses that's commensurate with the top line. There's not a lot of leverage, and there might be even a little bit of non-leverage in the FY 15 outlook. But they're going to be very close to each other.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Kent Schofield with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the granularity on the CCOP business around the different business lines there. Just as we think about modeling those, are there significant gross margin differences that we should keep in mind? And is one business more susceptible to changes around, for example, the lumpiness that you referred to in Datacom, meaning does it see a bigger impact or less impact, as we think about modeling those three lines?
Are you talking within CCOP?
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, think about telecom, datacom, consumer,
sure.
And just kind of the gross margin differentials there and kind of the lumpiness, how that impacts those three lines.
Sure. I think it depends a lot about which product within each of those groups, meaning, a pluggable product for radio base station where there's seven competitors, gross margins are typically much lower than a 100G modulator, and both of those are in, one in datacom, one in telecom. But if you looked at CFP2 margins, I'd say those are higher. So as we look forward, we're really focused on generating revenue from products less than 2 years old, higher than 50%, to be able to continue that gross margin improvement. So I wouldn't say that you can make a general statement about datacom or telecom or other being radically different in gross margin. It's the products within. And where we have good, strong products like tunable XFPs, those are margin products that are strong because of our long history of driving cost reductions and learning curve. And so I think if you threw it all into a blender, it's really hard to say. The blended rates are probably pretty equivalent.
Okay. And then as a follow-up, can you give us an update on China in terms of how you seem to be progressing towards the 10 to 15 million that you guys have discussed in the past?
Yeah, we see probably the optical component side being a little bit stronger because we roughly said 10 million of the incremental comes from optical components and about 5 million from NSC. So I think on the path we're on right now and where we're seeing the spending probably a little bit healthier in optical components and probably not as quick in NSE, although we think we're making good traction there. So I think blended, we come out about the same, but it's going to be a little bit higher mix as we go through the last part of this calendar year from optical components and less than what we expected in NSE.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Dimitri Nedis with William Blair. Please proceed.
Yes, thank you. On that last question, how long does this China build out last? Do you guys have a sense of, is this a couple of quarter scenario, or is this could be kind of a few year type of build out deployment model?
It's hard to judge, but we believe it's going to last at least through the end of the calendar year as far as the base station build out. I would suspect with the numbers they put out there originally, it should last longer than that, but we would see a path at least to the end of the calendar year. And then I think all the backbone build out to support those base stations is really just pretty early stages, and that would go on longer as you start filling up capacity on the TD-LT networks. And that drives back through the backbone. So from my perspective, it's still in a pretty early stage, although they build out quite a few base stations. A smaller percentage of those have been actually turned up with volume on them. So I think there's quite a bit still to happen in China.
Great. I appreciate the color. And then my other question would be on Volte, still kind of sticking to the wireless side. One of your direct competitors actually talking about significant order flow with some major operators in Asia. where do you stand on that? What products do you have that target this market, if any? And how do you kind of take that market on?
David, you want to comment on the Volte market and our product alignment?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No, and revenue, for that matter, if you have it.
Yeah, good question. While we're not breaking it out by solution in terms of revenue, our next-generation mobile assurance platform handles Volte. Our base station test platform handles Volte. RAN optimization, it's really a more delicate application that's going across the networks. And so a substantial portion, as we look at our mobile pipeline, is people preparing the networks not just for the raw capacity, but the delicacy of then putting Volte across the network. So we face up against those competitors, and off players like Anritsu and others, we've been taking share here recently. To the question on China, yeah, it's just multi-year. The Chinese are building out that network, and as they add the capacity, they're finding out the complexity they need. We've had some early design wins there in the NSE market. But China tends to be very, very late in terms of the utilization of test, turn-up, and optimization. That tends to get shorter and shorter as the technologies become more complex, and we're certainly there partnering with them in a multi-year build-out in China.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And then last, just a quick one on the two operator customers that you had last quarter that didn't come in into revenue. Did you book these customers? I think one order was a pretty significant one. Around $8 to $10 million, which was slated for Metro project. Did that come in this quarter, or was that extended out again?
So, just to clarify your question, there was a next generation mobile assurance. We did close two tier one players in Q4 as a result of our unique solution, and that pipeline continues to build, and will be included again in that SE guidance. But as Rex mentioned earlier, you're going to see, for example, we look year over year at Q1, we expect bookings to be up quarter over quarter in year one. Those revenues tend to then happen, in the back half of the year and the early half of the year following, depending on the quarter they're booked. They're anywhere from 6 to 12 months lagging.
I thought there was opportunity, which was a pretty significant one, somewhere in the order of $8 to $10 million last quarter, which didn't book or didn't close for revenue last quarter. And I was just asking if you booked it or recognized it for revenue this quarter, and if not, when do you expect to get that?
Yeah, I'm not sure the origin of your question. In Q3, we had some slowness in the Metro market.
Yeah, that's right.
And we were able, if you look at the NE numbers that Rex broke out, we were very strong in NE. In fact, some of the opportunity from Q1 actually pulled into Q4. And so, yeah, we did see some significant strength in the NE market in Q4.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Subramanian with the Judah Group. Please proceed.
Thank you. I had two questions. First, on fourth quarter, or I should say the December quarter for the carrier side, you normally see some CapEx on test, and I'm wondering if you expect to see a strong December quarter for test. Or, Tom, you had mentioned you think there could be a couple of quarters more of the impact of these transitions. I'm just curious how you think about seasonality in December. And then also to verify kind of your comments on the mid to high single digit growth, a similar question was asked earlier, but is that applicable, you think, to fiscal 15, or given some of the transitions both on the carrier side and in your business side, is that more of a long-term view for market growth?
Yeah, I think as far as the December quarter, we do expect it to be a seasonally up quarter. So there will be that improved revenue and bookings based on seasonality. I don't know that we can quantify that at this point, but we do believe it will be seasonally up. The comment on the mid to low single digit growth for FY15, yes, we believe that we are in that range as we look out through the fiscal year, although we'll see some slowness in the Q1 seasonally, which is pretty normal, but also
On the NE side, probably a bit softer than usual because of the consolidation and the architectural changes.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark McKinney with Evercore. Please proceed.
Oh, great. Thanks. Thanks for the segment detail on CCOP. This might be for Rex or even Bill, but could you give the mix between telco, datacom, and consumer for the March quarter? I think you gave for a year ago, but trying to figure out how that telco business trended quarter on quarter. I think I recall last quarter you had a delay in 100 gig metro deployment that kind of slowed things down, and I want to get a sense for the status of that as well. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you could probably back into it because the telecom datacom mix was still approximately 80-20 to give you the, so it would be reasonably consistent with Q4, at least from a mix perspective, I would think. Alan, do you have any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think while we saw 3D sensing drop as expected, we did see some strength offsetting that in our industrial diode business that is in that other category. So not a big shift overall between the two, but I think apples to apples, not much shift between the March quarter and the June quarter on the datacom versus telecom.
Our last question comes from the line of Rod Hall, J.P. Morgan. Please proceed.
Yeah, hey, guys. Thanks for getting me in there. Just a couple of quick questions. I guess EMEA growth accelerated quite a bit. It's 16% in the quarter. Do you think that that's a sustainable growth rate? Do you think growth continues to accelerate? I just wonder if you could comment on what you think happens in EMEA over the next few quarters. And then I also wondered if you could – there seemed to be a lot of misperception in the market about – the linkage between optical systems and 100 gig in particular and some of the CapEx slowdown that we're seeing in North America in the second half of the year, which seems mostly linked to wireless. I wonder if you guys could comment on, you know, whether you think optical systems is affected at all by that, or do we see pretty normal seasonality through the calendar year on optical system spending in the U.S.? Thanks.
I'll take the EMEA and then maybe ask David and Alan to comment on the optical systems 100G. But yeah, we do, we think EMEA is definitely coming off the bottom, and we did see that approximately 8% growth year on year. So we are seeing some improvement in EMEA and more consistency, I think, of the order flow, whereas if I go back to last year, it was very lumpy. It seemed like they're just spending at the, you know, when they absolutely had to. Now it seems like they're being a bit more proactive and building out the technology. So I think it's probably too early to call as a trend, but from what we've seen, we do think we're going to continue to see some strengthening there in the EMEA.
Yeah, and as far as optical systems are concerned, I think what we're seeing is a continued deployment of upgrades of existing networks from 10 and 40G to 100G, and less so the deployment of greenfields as the network architecture is still being sorted out. There was an interesting analysis by Ovum done about CDC architecture and flex grid stuff. And while carriers say they're going to deploy it, there's only a small percentage of them deploying today. But at the end of this calendar year and into calendar 15, the majority of those surveyed said that that was the time for the network deployments of colorless, directionless type networks. So today is mostly the transmission over existing networks at 100G.
There are no further questions in queue. I'll now turn the call back over to Mr. Bill Ong for closing remarks.
Thank you, Willie. JDSU will be participating at the following investor-related events. There are three Silicon Valley bus tours that are taking place at our corporate campus. MKM Partners on August 20th, B. Riley on August 25th, and RBC on August 27th. We are also hosting a 2014 Analyst Day event on September 11th here at our corporate campus in Milpitas, California. We hope to see many of you here. Thank you, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.